This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I offer an update on the case of Barry and Suzanne Morphew? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the alleged crime, then offer my analysis. Barry Lee Morphew was born on October 17, 1967. Suzanne Renee Morphew was born on April 30, 1971. The couple married in 1994 and would go on to have two daughters. They lived in Arcadia, Indiana, but in 2018 moved to Salida, Colorado. They had a $1.5 million mansion there. Suzanne worked at a nonprofit organization, and Barry owned a landscaping business. Not long after moving to Colorado, Suzanne connected with an old high school friend named Jeff Libler, a married father of six who lived in Michigan. Suzanne and Jeff had an affair. They would travel to various parts of the country to have sex. Jeff never traveled to Colorado because he knew that Barry had surveillance cameras around the house. Now moving to the timeline of the alleged crime. On Sunday, May 10, 2020, at about 5:58 p.m., the police were notified that Suzanne Morphew was missing. The police contacted Barry. He told them he last saw his wife at 5 a.m. that day. He left to go to a landscaping job in Broomfield, Colorado. Suzanne was still asleep when he departed, and they did not talk to each other. Barry's daughters were on a road trip in Utah when their mother went missing. The police searched for Suzanne. They did not find her, but they did find items of interest. For example, her bicycle was found near a ravine close to the bottom of a hill not far from the Morphew residence. On May 13, the police found Suzanne's bicycle helmet near Highway 50, almost a mile from where the bicycle was found. The police suspected that Barry had murdered his wife. They thought that his movements were suspicious, and they discovered that Suzanne had been unfaithful. The police collected a variety of additional evidence that suggested Suzanne was killed by her husband. Barry Morphew was arrested on May 4, 2021, almost a year after his wife's disappearance. He was charged with several offenses, including first-degree murder. He was also charged with submitting a presidential ballot for Donald Trump in Suzanne's name. He would later say that he did this because he thought Suzanne would have voted for Donald Trump anyway. The state's theory of the crime was that Barry killed Suzanne on May 9, 2020, the day before she was reported missing, by shooting her with a tranquilizer dart as she was running around their house trying to get away from him. The case against Barry did not go to trial. On April 19, 2022, all the charges against Barry Morphew were dismissed without prejudice, which means they can be refiled at a later time. Now moving to my analysis. Barry Morphew has maintained his innocence. The state still believes that Barry was involved, but they don't want to risk going to trial without a body. It would appear as though the sword of Damocles is dangling above Barry's head. He never knows when the charges could be refiled. In a surprising move, Barry has gone on the offensive. He filed a $15 million lawsuit against several law enforcement officials for alleged violations, including malicious prosecution, unlawful detention, fabrication of evidence, conspiracy, failure to intervene, and reckless investigation. This brings me to the question, was Barry Morphew responsible for Suzanne's disappearance or murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Barry was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Suzanne was having an affair for 2 years before she disappeared. This type of behavior is usually not a sign of a happy marriage. Suzanne was preparing to separate from Barry in the months leading up to her disappearance. 4 days before she disappeared, she sent a text message to Barry saying she was done. When speaking to investigators, Barry initially implied that his marriage was perfect and Suzanne had no intention of leaving him. On May 8, 2020, 2 days before Suzanne disappeared, she put a note in her phone indicating that, on May 6, Barry accused her of having a boyfriend. This makes it seem like Barry found out what Suzanne was up to, and he was not pleased. In addition to this note, Suzanne also had several other notes that appeared in her phone, which documented alleged misdeeds by Barry. For example, there were references to physical and mental harm, threatening behavior, being oppressive, guilt trips, taking her phone, being untrustworthy, and a note suggesting that Barry slammed on his brakes when he was angry. I find it ironic that, in a manner of speaking, the police are accusing Barry of not slamming on his brakes when he was angry. On May 9, Suzanne sent a selfie to her lover, Jeff, at 2:03 p.m. and sent a message containing text to him at 2:11 p.m. According to the police, there was no activity on her phone after 2:30 p.m. Barry put his own cell phone in airplane mode at 2:47 p.m., and it stayed that way for 9 hours. This makes it seem like Barry was trying to hide his activity. He had just arrived home a few minutes before he put the phone in airplane mode. There are inconsistencies in Barry's story regarding what he did in the hours leading up to Suzanne's disappearance. On May 9, 2020, data from Barry's cell phone indicated he was running all around the house. He told the police that he was chasing a chipmunk. Barry said that his alarm woke him up on May 10 at 4:30 a.m., but his alarm was not set. Both his phone and his pickup truck were moving in the 3 a.m. hour. Barry was forced to modify his timeline after getting caught in this lie. Barry said that he had to go to a job in Broomfield, Colorado, but he never told his coworkers he would be leaving for the job that morning. The job didn't technically start until Monday, but Barry left on Sunday, as if he was going there to get things ready. In his initial story to the police, Barry never mentioned turning west on Highway 50, but later he admitted that he did. He said that he was following an elk down the highway at 4:30 a.m. on May 10. Suzanne's helmet was later found right near where Barry had driven that morning. A plastic needle cover for a tranquilizer dart was found in Barry's driver. Barry blamed God for causing Suzanne's death because she was having an affair. This makes it seem like Barry believed her death was justified.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Moving to the exculpatory factors. In the summer of 2020, DNA from at least one unknown male was found in several places, including Suzanne's bicycle, her bicycle helmet, her Range Rover, carpet by her bed, and on the stairs of her house. The police had used Barry's cell phone to determine he was running around to various areas of his house on the day he allegedly killed his wife. Investigators admitted that a phenomenon called static drift interferes with the ability to determine movement using GPS readings in tight areas. Based on the timestamps of the waypoints, Barry was traveling between 35 and 50 miles per hour as he moved around his house. Even if the chipmunk had grabbed his phone, it could not have moved that quickly. A forensic report documenting activity on Suzanne's computer showed that someone had accessed her Pinterest account late on May 9, hours after she was supposedly dead. The police accused Barry of shooting Suzanne with a tranquilizer dart, but admitted that his tranquilizer gun was inoperable and had not been fired in quite some time. Suzanne hid the affair with Jeff extremely well. She was phenomenally conniving. Perhaps Barry did not know about it. In theory, hiding the affair from Barry would have been Suzanne's top priority. The police made it seem as though Barry unexpectedly drove to Broomfield, Colorado for that job, but he did have a job there and had communicated with others about it several times. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Barry Morphew was guilty? I have more doubt about this case than I did when it was first reported. However, I still believe that Barry is probably guilty in reality. It just seems too convenient that he traveled on a Sunday to a hotel near a job that was starting on Monday without saying a word to his wife before leaving. As far as the unknown male DNA, it could have been left behind in any number of ways, perhaps even by chance. Even though I believe Barry is probably guilty, I am not convinced that he is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a concern that the state of Colorado appears to share. The state really needs to find Suzanne's body or make another significant discovery to feel comfortable moving forward with this case. Moving to the next question, what do I think about Barry's lawsuit? The lawsuit that he filed was 185 pages. This isn't terribly surprising considering the arrest affidavit was 131 pages. There was a lot that his attorneys needed to respond to if they wanted to make a case for malicious prosecution, reckless investigation, and all the other alleged offenses. The lawsuit made a number of good points. It more or less attempted to dismantle the state's case, and it did highlight a number of weaknesses and mistakes. The police twisted Barry's words around and claimed that he said things that he didn't say. For example, when he was told about Suzanne's bicycle being found, the police said that Barry blamed a mountain lion. In reality, Barry simply mentioned that there was a mountain lion in the area, which there was. Investigators claim that Barry described his wife as having labored breathing when he left the house, like she was asleep in bed when he left and was having trouble breathing, but he actually said that she was snoring. The police made several inferences that are not supported by evidence, like they accused Barry of not being able to describe steaks that he and Suzanne ate for dinner on the day she was allegedly murdered. Is this a standard that anyone else uses when trying to demonstrate their innocence? I've never seen a murder defendant get on the stand and say, "I know the state has all this evidence against me, but just wait until you hear me describe the stakes." I think that investigators simply made too many assumptions about what happened. They made themselves look biased by interpreting everything that Barry said as inculpatory. This highlights one of the many problems with talking to the police. Barry would have never been charged if he had not made any statements to the police. One element that can be inferred from the lawsuit, which is not favorable to Barry, is how many of the statements he made to the police were in response to something incorrect that they were telling him. The lawsuit made it seem as though the police tricked him into saying these things, but that's just one way to interpret this. I look at it as though Barry was making things up so his story would match the purported evidence. Investigators were lying to Barry or misleading him, and he was trying to explain their discoveries. If Barry did nothing but tell the truth, it would not have mattered if the police gave him inaccurate information. His story with the chipmunk is a great example. The cell phone data indicating Barry was moving around the house may not have been accurate, but Barry responded to the police talking about this by making up this whole story about chasing a chipmunk. If Barry wasn't moving around the house at 35 to 50 miles an hour, then why did he feel compelled to explain this movement? There is a sense that Barry is overly eager to establish his innocence. For example, he repeatedly asked investigators why he had not been cleared as a suspect. This is one of the few questions that answers itself. It's possible that Barry's lawsuit is an extension of his anxiety, like he is so uncomfortable being under constant threat of arrest that he's channeling the anxiety and going on the offensive. He needs to do something. He doesn't want to sit still. He doesn't want to wait around for the charges to return. He believes that being proactive will help him prove his innocence and therefore prevent prosecution in the future. I think all Barry can really do is enjoy his freedom while he has it. He's in a tough situation. Now moving to my final thoughts. I don't know if Barry Morphew is guilty or not, but it seems clear that the relationship between him and his wife was not ideal. Suzanne was in a long-term affair and took incredible measures to hide it, all the while blaming Barry for her bad behavior. Barry was allegedly being oppressive, making threats, and chasing chipmunks. Both parties appeared to be driven by strong emotions.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.